As much as Wayne appreciated all the fancy treats the governor was providing, he had to admit he wasn't entirely sympathetic to the man's plight. After all, the whole point of having someone in charge, like the governor, was about making sure people knew which fellow to kill. That was why they had elections, wasn't it? Innate got to be in charge and order everybody about, but when the assassins got bored, they didn't go whack the guy that sold fish on the street corner. They went for the guy in charge. You had to take the good with the bad, you did. On one hand, you got fancy sweets any time of day. On the other hand, you might find murderers in your loo. That was the breaks. And this Innate guy, he seemed to really want to meet Iron Eyes. Not running away to the country when you knew a psychopathic, shape-shifting super allomancer was after you? Yeah, he understood he was a target. As Wayne sauntered after him, taking the tray from the serving girl as she tried to retreat with the uneaten cakes, the governor stopped in the doorway to his study.
I need a few minutes to think, to prepare my remarks. Thank you.
But sir, you can't go in alone. We need to protect you.
And what are you going to do about someone who can move at the speed of a thunderclap? We will just have to take our chances that the constables can deal with this creature.
I don't think...
Wayne rolled his eyes, then leaned against the wall, looking at the other two guards.
You two, go watch the window from outside that room, why don't you? We'll sit up here.
The two fellows shuffled, looked like they'd object, but then slunk out of the hallway. Wayne settled down on the floor beside the door.
I wonder if they're rethinking their career choices. But with most everyone else guarding the governor dead already.
You mortals can be surprisingly cavalier with your limited lifespans.
Yeah, he probably just wants to get me into trouble.
What, by getting himself killed?
Sure. The idiot forbade me from going to his fancy party earlier, then ditched me afterwards. He's got it in for me. He's gonna get himself killed and leave me to explain it to Wax.
Sorry, mate, I'll let your pet politician get ripped in half.
And Wax will scowl at me really good, even though it's not my fault.
Milan sat down across from him.
Is that what happened to his horse?
Why you gotta bring that up again?
Wayne wriggled down to get comfortable and tipped his hat over his eyes.
That really wasn't my fault. I had myself a debilitating injury when that happened.
Hmm?
Yeah, made me cuss and drink like a bugger.
He settled back, listening, eyes closed. Servants moved through the building. Messengers went over their routes. Important types discussed their opinions just a room over. They all talked. Everyone had to talk. People couldn't just think something. They had to explain it. Wayne was the same. He was people, after all. This murderer, this Chandra, she was people too. She had talked to Wax. She had to talk. Wax would probably catch her. He did things like that, impossible things that nobody thought he could. But just in case he didn't, Wayne listened. You could tell a lot about people from the way they talked. You saw their past, their upbringing, their aspirations, all in the words they used. And this Chandra, sooner or later she'd slip up and use the wrong word. A word that would be obvious, like a fellow drinking milk in the middle of a rowdy tavern. He didn't hear anything right off, though oddly, he did notice Melan whispering to herself.
She would have been a Tofi.
Hmm?
Your bones. Woman you're wearing right now. Tofi, second Octon, raised on the outskirts.
And how do you know that?
Heard a curse as I was helping her.
Like this. Second Octon, touch of agave, farmer.
Nice. Draw out the end of your sentences, pitch them lower. Get some real Tofi into that voice.
Oh, is this better?
Yeah, actually.
Wayne sat up.
That's damn good.
Tenzin would be proud. I can still get a difficult accent right when I need to.
Difficult? The Tofi accent?
With agave farmer.
Common mix. Once I had to do a guy who grew up on the northwestern coast, raised by deaf parents, only talking once in a while, who had then moved in with the terrorist fundamentalists up in the mountains there. It's better if I have a hat.
A hat?
Sure. Hats is a disguise for your brain. Helps you think like the person what wore it last. You want to know a guy? Put on his hat.
Has anyone ever told you you're surprisingly wise?
All the bloody time.
They're idiots. You're not wise. You're playing them. You're doing this on purpose. I love it.
Wayne tipped his head forward, smiling and leaning back again.
I'm not lying about the hats, though. They do help.
Sure, like bones.
He cracked an eye at her.
Does it ever bother you, knowing you might live forever?
Bother me? Well, why would it? Immortality is damn convenient.
Don't know about that. Seems to me that it would be nice to be finally done, you know? It's like you're running a race, and you don't know quite where the end is, but you got an idea, and you only need to make it that far. I can do that, I figure. But you don't have no end.
You actually sound like you want to die.
Someday. Oh, maybe I should get into politics.
Milan shook her head at him, seeming bemused.
It can be daunting to consider eternity as Harmony must see it. But any time I get bored, I can just live a new life.
Put on a new hat. Become someone else.
Switch it up. Be bold where I once was timid. Be crass where I was respectful. Makes life interesting, dynamic. And there's something else. We can die, if we want.
What, just like that?
Kinda. Don't know if you read the accounts. They're blurry about this topic anyway, but near the end of the World of Ash, Ruin tried to take over the Chondra, control them directly. Well, Tensoon and those in charge, they were really terrified by that, so they planned, and we all talked. And about a century after the Katasandra, we figured out a way to stop our own lives. Takes a little concentration, but it sets the body into a spiral where we just end.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense. Always have an escape route planned.
You're wasted as a human.
Nah, I barely had a few mouthfuls today.
Wayne reached into his pocket and checked his flask.
Well, maybe a wee bit more than that.
No, I meant...
He grinned at her, then she grinned back. He tipped his hat to her, then closed his eyes and continued listening. A short time later, she stood up and started pacing the hall. He listened for a good long while, catching nothing abnormal, though he was pretty sure the sanitation minister guy was lying about his education. That fellow had never been to the university. Or if he had, he hadn't hung around long enough to pick up the proper words.
Are you going to get out of my way or not?
Wayne was mulling this over when he heard something out front. He scrambled to his feet.
Gotta go. Lost idiot.
But
be right back.
Wayne clutched his hat and ran down the hallway, his long, rough-style duster flaring to the sides. He raced around the corner and dashed toward the front of the mansion.
He said to deliver it here, so I brought it. It was a simple task. He just needed something made. Hardly worth waking me.
She turned to him. A radiant, glorious woman, built like a good rough's fence. Just tall enough, lean, but strong, too. She had dark hair, which he'd compared to a pony's on several occasions, and it was right unfair that she should get mad, considering she kept it in a tail and everything. She wore trousers, because skirts were stupid, and boots, because stuff needed to be kicked. The whole world could be going wrong, but seeing her made him forget. He grinned. In return, she gave him her special scowl, the one just for him. It was how he knew she cared. That, and when she shot him, she tended to aim for places that didn't hurt too much.
She's with me.
Like hell I am.
Renette let him steer her away from the butler anyway.
When's the last time you bathed? Just, you know, curious.
Guns don't care if I stink, Wayne. I have things to do. And I don't like being ordered around.
She shook a little cloth pouch in her left hand. Wayne got her into the sitting room. She didn't stink, despite what she said. She smelled of grease and gunpowder. Good scents. Renette scents.
What is it?
Wayne snatched the pouch once they were out of sight.
Something Wax asked me to make. Who got killed over there?
She pointed toward the still-open secret door down to the safe room. Murder always caught her attention, if only because she'd want to see the bodies and judge how well the bullets tore up the flesh. Wayne rolled a small metal object from the pouch onto his palm. A bullet. His hand started to shake.
Oh, for Harmony's sake.
Renette plucked the bullet from his hand before he could drop it.
It's not a gun, you idiot.
It's a part of one.
Wayne shoved his hand in his pocket. He could hold a bullet. He did that all the time. For Wax. The shaking subsided. Something seemed odd about that bullet, though.
So if I gave you a splinter of wood and told you it had once been in a rifle stock, you'd go to pieces then, too?
Dunno. You think I understand how my brain works?
I'd say there's a logical fallacy in that statement. Maybe two.
She tucked the bullet back into the pouch.
Wax here?
No. He's off detectiving.
Then you'll have to take this.
She handed him the pouch.
His note insisted it was important. Half powder, as he asked, piercing bullet, forged not to shatter.
He could hold a bullet. He took it, then tucked it away immediately in his duster.
So, wanna go get a drink? You know, when the city is safe. Or maybe before it's safe. I don't mind none if the pub's a little on fire while we drink.
You know I'd sooner shoot myself, Wayne. And Mizra would shoot me if by chance I did go, come to think of it.
Wayne frowned. That was nowhere near the vitriol he normally got from her.
What's wrong?
She shook her head, glancing back toward the entryway.
It's bad out there, Wayne. People still on the streets, thronging together, shouting. I've seen crowds like this before, in the roughs. Usually right before a man got strung up, law or no law. And those were towns of 500. What happens when it's 5 million who start acting like that?
Probably the return of the Ashen World. What better time to finally profess your long-requited love for a certain handsome fellow who don't mind none if you smell like the inside of a barrel of sulfur?
She gave him the glare again. He grinned. But then she didn't shoot him, or even punch him. Damn, this was bad.
They're starting to gather outside, chanting slogans about the governor.
I need to check that.
If the governor wasn't going to let him in and watch him close up, maybe he could learn something about Bleeder's plans out in that crowd.
Get back to your house, lock the doors, and keep your guns handy.
Captain Aradel regarded the governor's writ as he would the last will and testament of a beloved family member, with both reverence and obvious discomfort.
He names me Lord High Constable, but Brusts, I'm no lord.
He looked up at Reddy and his other lieutenants.
Perhaps the appointment conveys a title, sir.
The governor can't just appoint someone to the peerage. A new title has to be ratified by a council with a quorum of the major house seats in the city.
She bit her lip as soon as she said it. She didn't mean to be contrary. Aradel didn't appear to mind. He carefully folded the writ and slid it into his jacket pocket. She'd found him gathering a sizable force outside of headquarters, preparing to still malcontents and the constabulary bells to let the people living nearby know that at least someone was patrolling this night. It felt like hell itself surrounded them, shrouded in a veil of darkness and fog.
Sir, the governor said that he wanted you to do two things. First, send a detachment to forcefully quell rioting in the city. Second, bring up a smaller force to guard him as he prepares to address the people near the mansion. You're not to turn protesters away there, but elsewhere in the city. Sir, he counseled you to be firm of hand. Very firm.
Rusting idiots deserve it.
No need for bloodthirst, Lieutenant Marilyn. I seem to remember you cussing out the Hastings family with some regularity yourself.
Doesn't mean I'm setting fire to the city. The high houses being bastards doesn't excuse being bastards ourselves, sir.
Well, the mansion seems a good enough center from which to operate. Chip, you and the messengers run to the other constables general and ask them to meet me at the governor's mansion with their officers. We'll coordinate the city lockdown from there. Everyone else, let's double time it that way. If His Grace wants to talk to the people, I want a nice thick barrier of police bodies between him and his constituents, understand?
The group bustled into motion, the messengers scattering, one even taking to the skies. Chip was one of the coin shots. The rest of the constables fell into a march, an uneven one. They weren't soldiers, but no less resolute.
Sir, there's something else I need to tell you, if you can spare a moment.
How important is it?
Aradel paused at the side of the group.
Very.
Perhaps you should discuss it while traveling to the mansion, sir, if the governor really is planning to address the crowds.
Yes. Innate suddenly appointed me Lord High Constable. That immediately worries me about what other kinds of impulsive things he's capable of doing tonight. Let's do this on the move, Combs. Ready. Bring along the rest of the constables as smartly as you can. I'm going to the mansion ahead of you.
Marcy nodded. The thing she wanted to discuss would be best said in the privacy of a carriage anyway. Aradel jogged over to a group of horses in constable livery, reins held by a corporal. The carriage she'd been contemplating pulled away, loaded with equipment, most likely. Reddy grinned at her smugly. She'd been looking forward to maintaining her decorum tonight. Ah, well. She walked over and took a set of reins. Aradel was already in his saddle. He glanced at her, then raised a hand to his head.
Oh, of course. I didn't think.
Marazzi swung up into the saddle, awkwardly bunching her skirt up between her legs and sitting on part of it, revealing a generous expanse of leg.
It occurs to me, sir, that lady constable uniforms could be distinctly more utilitarian.
We'll make a note of it, Lieutenant Combs.
Aradel glanced toward the retreating carriage.
If you wish.
Sir, I believe the city is on fire. Perhaps we can discuss feminine modesty on another occasion?
Of course.
He nodded and they set off, trailed by two corporals with rifles in the scabbards on their saddles. The four horses quickly outpaced the larger group of constables, and even the carriage, as they rode through the mists. Marcy was glad of the darkness as it hid her furious blush. In compensation, she had gained the memory of Reddy's stunned expression, utterly shocked by what she'd done. Well, why shouldn't she show her legs? Historical precedent and simple practicality demanded that women be allowed into all professions. What lord would turn away a thug or a bloodmaker from his guards just because she had breasts? What constable office would pass up the chance to have every tin eye or coin shot they could get? What bank wouldn't jump at the chance to employ a terrace woman with copper mines? The thing was, woman constables were also expected to be models of ladylike behavior. A holdover from the old days, reinforced by the speeches of Lady Alrianne Ladrian soon after the Catasandra. There was just this blunt expectation that you would strive to remain feminine at the same time as you did your job. A heavy double standard to bear. At times, Marcy didn't mind. She liked dresses and nice hair and solving problems with a careful word instead of a fist to the face. To her, it was perfectly reasonable to be feminine and a constable. But did the men ever have to worry about being properly masculine while doing their jobs?
One social problem at a time.
Though she was going to buy some rusting trousers. Riding this way was cold.
You ride well.
I've had plenty of practice.
That's uncommon in the city these days. A hobby?
You could say that.
Marcy blushed as she remembered her girlish fascination with the roughs, lawmen, and Alamancer Jack stories. When her friends, well, acquaintances, had been given new coats for their birthdays, she'd begged for a ruffs duster and hat. Pure foolishness, of course. She'd completely grown out of that.
What is it you wanted to tell me?
Marcy opened the purse she'd slung over her shoulder and thrust the letters at Aradel. She hadn't consciously realized how eager she'd been to pass them on to someone else so that the responsibility they represented wouldn't rest solely on her. Aradel took them.
What's this?
You remember telling me to snoop around the governor's place if I got the chance?
I remember telling you with great circumspection to keep your eyes open, Lieutenant.
I did, sir. I kept my hands open, too, in case something damning happened to fall into them.
Harmony, what did you find?
Letters from innate to various ladies and lords in the city, arranging for the purchase of political favors and the suppression of legislation they didn't want. Sir, they're annotated in his own hand, and they match my records of suspicious events during his tenure as governor. During the ride to bring you the writ, I read through them, and I'm convinced he's just as corrupt as his brother was.
Aradel gave no outward reaction of either surprise or outrage. He rode in silence, gripping the letters, eyes forward.
Sir?
You put me in a difficult position, Lieutenant.
Sir, I'd say the governor has put you in that position, not me.
How legally did you obtain these?
That depends on how the courts would interpret your authority to investigate when there is reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing, and whether or not you were justified in authorizing me to act.
In other words, you stole them.
Yes, sir.
Aradel tucked them away.
It doesn't mean we shouldn't protect him, sir. Until proven guilty in court, he's still the rightful leader of the city. This isn't the roughs, where we can just stride up and shoot someone, then publish our reasons later.
The mere fact that you feel you need to point that out means you've been spending too much time with your coin shot, friend Combs. I'm not considering avoiding my duty. I'm just thinking of all those people, and they're rioting. And they're right. They are being robbed by the system. Ruin. We were supposed to be better than this. What if the Lord Mistborn saw us now?
I suspect he'd tell us to do something about the situation.
Tradition held that today's field of rebirth looked exactly the same as on that day long ago when humankind had crept from the wombs of stone that Harmony had created. Though the city had claimed all of the surrounding area, this central ring of pleasant grass and gentle hills had been left as a monument to another time. Mariwil Flowers brushed Wax's mist coat as he strode across the springy ground. The tradition that this place hadn't changed was pure stupidity. Surely when Breeze and Hammond had climbed out into the sunlight, they hadn't found grass that was perfectly manicured or flowers that grew in careful lines. Did people who spoke of that tradition just ignore the benches and the pathways, the buildings? Surely Harmony hadn't left lavatories on the grassland for the convenience of visitors. The center of the highest hill was topped by the half-museum, half-mausoleum sheltering the tombs of the last emperor and the ascendant warrior. Their giant statues rose above, dominating the area. As Wax approached, he was surprised to find lamps on the low structure spilling light across the grass and flowers. A pair of constables guarded the door.
Now just turn on back and don't make trouble.
Wax strode out of the mists and up to the men.
The caretakers called for your help, I assume?
The two constables studied him, then reluctantly saluted. His reputation preceded him, though these men wore the patches of constables from the first octant. It was a precinct he hadn't often visited, but who else strode through the night in a mist coat with a shotgun strapped to his leg?
They're worried about looters, sir.
Wise.
Wax strode past them and pushed into the mausoleum.
Sir, they said not to let...
Wax scanned the open foyer with its murals of the originators, Hammond, the Lord Mistborn, Lady Truth, Wax's own ancestor, Edgar Ladrian. Portly and self-satisfied, in his portrait he held a cup of wine. He'd always looked like the sort of person Wax would want to punch on sight, the type who was certainly guilty of something. Wax ignored the displays of various relics from the World of Ash and didn't enter the chamber that held the resting places of the Ascendant Warrior and her husband, though he did raise his gun and spin the cylinder toward them in acknowledgement, a rough's tradition to respect the fallen.
What's this?
A bleary-eyed woman stepped out of a nearby room, apparently a small apartment for the caretaker.
Nobody was to be let in.
Routine inspection.
Wax strode past without looking.
Routine? In the middle of the night?
You asked for constable involvement. Codes require that when you ask for guards from the precinct, we have to do an inspection to make sure you don't have contraband.
Contraband? This is the originator tomb.
Just doing my job. You can take it up with my superiors outside if you wish.
She stormed out toward the front doors in a huff as Wax reached a small room unadorned with relics or plaques. The only thing in here was a hole in the ground. It was a gaping pit fenced by a railing to keep inquisitive children from tumbling in. There was a ladder, but Wax dropped a bullet casing and jumped, falling freely a short distance before slowing himself and landing on the dark, glassy stone floor below. A few lights dangled from the ceiling like drips of molasses. He pushed on a nearby light switch, causing the lights to flicker on throughout this enormous cavern. He'd visited here as a youth. Every tutor brought their charges to visit, and he understood it was common in the public schools as well. It felt different now, standing alone in the large, low-ceilinged chamber. No jabbering tourists to break the mood or chase away visions of the past. He walked into the cavern, trying to imagine what it had been like to huddle in one of these caves, the world dying outside, wondering if you were going to spend the rest of your short life trapped in darkness. He trailed his fingers on the stone walls as he wound around corners. The place was large and open, but also contained a series of smaller, bulbous chambers at the side. Most were part of the museum and contained plaques with quotes from the originators written in metal. Others contained depictions of the rebuilding of the world or other relics, such as a replica of both Harmony's bands and the Bands of Mourning. One entire chamber was dedicated to the words of founding, Harmony's books, lore, knowledge, and own holy account of what had happened to the World of Ash. Another chamber contained volumes by other originators, some of which were considered holy canon by one sect or another, while some, like the Doxythium, were decidedly apocryphal. Wax had tried to read the thing once. Copyright pages were more interesting. He lingered at a chamber dedicated to the survivor, containing 100 different depictions of him by various artists, some contemporary, others ancient. There was fervent fascination with his posthumous apparitions to people during the final days, though Harmony himself attributed those to the faceless immortals. Wayne would probably give him hell for confusing the poor people rather than just telling them what he was doing. Of course, Wayne would probably have convinced them he was the Lord Ruler, then made them fix him dinner. So he tried not to let Wayne's moral compass influence him too much. Wax counted down the chambers dedicated to each of the metals until he reached the sign of Atium. This little chamber contained documentation and rumors about the mythological metal. Wax didn't have the time to read them. Instead, he followed the blue lines his steel sight showed him. They pointed toward a side wall where he was able to pry back a decorative piece of wood paneling and push on a lever, popping open a doorway and revealing a cavern beyond. He slipped in, unhooked an old oil lantern from the wall, and pulled the door shut before kneeling down in the pitch darkness and fishing in his gun belt for some matches. He pulled them out.
I've been waiting for you.